Hare Krishna. So thank all of you for coming today evening. And I'll speak today about the life lessons that we can learn from the Mahabharata, specifically from the main villain in the Mahabharata, that is Duryodhana. Madhvacharya, one of our most prominent acharyas in the Vaishnava tradition, explains that the epics, they can be understood at three levels. It is literal, ethical, and metaphorical. Literal means they are history, they are events that happened, and we just hear about them, we'll get purified by that hearing. Ethical means we can learn what lessons, okay, this character acted this way, this choice was wrong. This character acted this way, this choice was good. So we can learn ethical lessons. And metaphorical means there can be some symbolic meanings. Now, of course, he's cautious to assert that the metaphorical meaning is in addition to the literal, not in replacement of the literal. But, so we will look at the Mahabharata from the ethical perspective to see what we can learn from it. Does everyone know the basic storyline of the Mahabharata here, or should I not assume that?
Yes.
Okay. So, okay, you don't. Okay, fine. Okay, fine. I'll give brief outlines. So the Mahabharata is a story where there are two sets of brothers, Pandavas and Kauravas, and the central character among the Kauravas is Duryodhana. We are going to study about him, and he was notoriously obstinate, and we will discuss how his obstinacy arises and how it misleads. So Duryodhana's father was Dhritarashtra, who was blind, and so he could not become the king. Younger brother Pandu became the king, but he was quite detached, and he renounced the world and went with his wives to a forest. So now, whether he was going to have children or not, it is also not clear. So when Dhritarashtra had a child, that first child was Duryodhana. So he was pampered and treated like royalty, because he was a member of the royalty, but he was expected to become the king. So he was the apple of the eye for everyone. And eventually, because of an unfortunate incident, Pandu passed away. And then the Pandavas, the sons of Pandu, came back. When they came back, at that time, they had lived in the sages with the Brahmana. They had lived in the forest with the sages. And they were very, in general, they were very gentle, courteous, respectful. And their behavior contrasted with the abrasive, arrogant behavior of Duryodhana and his brothers. And naturally, the affection of all the courtiers as well as the citizens started shifting from Duryodhana to Yudhishthir and his brothers. Yudhishthir was the eldest of the Pandavas. So because of this, Duryodhana started becoming immensely envious. And he felt that the Pandavas are taking away that which was meant for me. So Duryodhana had what we could call in today's language as the entitlement mentality. He felt that I am entitled to all this. And this entitlement, if somebody feels I'm entitled to something, and when that entitled thing is taken away, one does not feel grateful that I had it. One feels outraged. How dare it be taken away? So, there's recently a study done about parenting, a comparative parenting styles in, say, in the Western world and in traditional world. So they compared with Africa. So they found that there are young kids in, they compared America and Africa. So in America, kids, when they grow up, They are pampered from childhood. Whatever they want, they are provided. And when they grow up, they may have 100 things, but if the 101st thing is not provided for them, they become infuriated. So, on the other hand, the same set of researchers, they went to Africa, and they were going on a safari in Africa. And there was a young girl who joined the safari. And when she joined the safari, at that time, she was just a small girl, maybe 10 or 11, something like that. Nobody told her to do anything. But on her own, when they would settle down at a particular place, she would find something to do. She would maybe lay the mats, clean up the pots, clean up the floor. She would herself do something without anyone telling her to do it. So this psychologist, he said that in America, even if you tell the kids, they will not do it. But here, she was doing it without being told. So, what was the reason for this? Now, the reason is not necessarily that children in Africa are good and children in America are bad. It is that children are children everywhere. But the way they are treated, but more than that, two children may be treated in the same way, but they may respond differently. So it is, A, if somebody gets an entitlement mentality, and B, if they feel that I deserve all the comforts, and if somebody doesn't provide me the comforts, then they are to be blamed. The Pandavas, they had lived in simplicity. So it's an oversimplification. You could say Duryodhana was somebody like living in America. The Pandavas were somebody like living in Africa. So, the Pandavas, when they lived in the forest, they had no servants. They had no assistants. So from their childhood, they saw that, we have to help in doing things. And they grew up with that ethos. So even when they came to the kingdom, they accepted the royal opulence. But that royal opulence did not lead to arrogance. And they remained humble, they remained cultured. So Duryodhana could not bear this. And he started plotting. How can I get the better of the Pandavas? Now Duryodhana was a person who had been especially pampered by his father Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra had been born blind, and he wanted to fulfill his desire for kingship vicariously through his son. So I cannot become the king, so let you become the king. Sometimes this is what the parents desire, I couldn't achieve this, I couldn't enjoy this, you should enjoy this. So that wanting to give the best to the children is fine, but when wanting to give the best to the children, what values we create in the children, that is also important. So because Dhritarashtra was so attached to Duryodhana, so the result of that was he couldn't tolerate even the smallest pain or displeasure or even the tantrum of Duryodhana. And then Duryodhana knew how to, even from his childhood, he could see that, I can control my father. So Dhritarashtra, in this way, he was a king in name only. From the early youth, Duryodhana started manipulating Duryodhana. So he felt that my father is on the chair, but actually I'm going to be the king, and even now I'm in power. So for us, all of us have been given certain things in life. Now, the things which we have been given, often we tend to take them for granted. And if something which you have been given, it is taken away, we feel outraged. Why was this taken away? So the entitlement mentality is actually the opposite of humility and gratitude. Entitlement, I deserve it. And rather than being grateful that I have been given it, I think, who dare take it away from me? So, with this entitlement, now it's to some extent natural. If something which we have been habituated to throughout our life, then it's natural that, okay, this is what I'm used to. Somebody has been always living in air conditioning. Then suddenly if they go to a place where there's no air conditioning, they feel very uncomfortable there. So at one level, to become habituated to what we are normally having and to expect it is a reasonable expectation. But at another level, if we look at our life, growing in life is essentially growing in selflessness. You know, when a baby is born, the baby does nothing for anyone. The baby just cries and everyone does things for the baby. Isn't it? But as the baby grows up, child says, no, okay, I know. Even if I cry, everything that I want is not going to be provided for me. And I am also meant to do some things. So the baby understands, I have to study. As the baby grows up, as the child grows up into a youth, I have to take to some work at home. I have to take up responsibilities. As a young person grows up further, says, no, rather than my parents doing something for me, I need to do something for them. I need to share their burden. I need to take their burden. So essentially, the biological growth happens automatically. But this growth in terms of selflessness, it does not happen automatically. It has to be done intentionally. And if that doesn't happen, then we stay emotionally immature, emotionally malformed, we could say. And because of, now if somebody is physically malformed, it is very easily visible. Okay, this person, one finger is missing, or this scar is there on the face, or whatever. But when people are emotionally malformed, that is not so easy to see. But, so emotionally malformed means that we never grow out of the entitlement mentality. Yes, and I'm used to AC. Okay, if I need air condition, that's fine. But then I have to work for it. I have to earn the money, then I can have it. So I need some facility, but along with that facility comes some responsibility, which I have to discharge. So Duryodhana never got this point that actually the attention and affection of others needs to be earned. He saw that, you know, I was getting all this and either Pandavas have taken it now. How dare they take it from me? So rather than thinking that I should do something to earn that affection back, that I should make my behavior more gentle, more cultured, more respectful. No. He thought the Pandavas are obstacles in my way. The nature of the human mind is to always look for problems out there. Rather than thinking that the problem may be in here, the mind's reflex action is, okay, the problem is out there. The problem is in that person. The problem is in that situation. The problem is in that particular event. So, because of that, we lose the opportunity for improvement. Now, yes, the problem may be out there. The problem may be in here. We have to objectively evaluate. Quite often, the problem is both. The problem is out there also and the problem is in here also. But for Duryodhana, he did not see that he was losing the attention and affection, not because the Pandavas were intentionally usurping it from him, but just that by their behavior, by their conduct, by their character, they were attracting him, attracting others. So he could have developed, improved his behavior. He could have changed his conduct. He could have developed his character. But instead of doing that, he started plotting to put the Pandavas down. So competition is a fact of life. We live in a world where the resources are limited. And whether it is in a school where the number one is going to be only one person, whether in a competitive exam where for entry into a college where the number of people are going to enter are finite, or it's getting a job where 100 people are interviewed and only 5 are going to be selected. Competition is a fact of life. But competition can be constructive or competition can be destructive. So constructive competition means the presence of others inspires me to improve. Destructive competition means that I want to destroy the other so that I can succeed. So Duryodhana had the mentality of destructive competition. And when he was just barely entering into his teens, at that time, he came up with a whole conspiracy to kill one of his own cousins, to kill Bhima. Now, among the five Pandavas, Yudhishthir was the eldest, and in a sense, Yudhishthir was the competitor to Duryodhana. Either who would become the king would be the eldest among the Kauravas or the eldest among the Pandavas. we all have, you could say, inside us a scale of envy. You know, so some people we feel a little envious of. Some people we feel much more envious of. Some people we feel hugely envious of. But some people are so good that they just go out of our scale of envy. I can't compete with this person only. Some people, they are so good, we just give up. Okay, I don't want to compete with this person. So in terms of character and behavior, Yudhishthir was so virtuous that Duryodhana realized, I can't compete with him. So he wanted the wealth, he wanted the kingdom. And later on, when Yudhishthir got a lot of wealth, he felt envious. But Duryodhana felt, my strength is my physical strength. He was the eldest and the strongest among the Kauravas. And he felt most challenged by the strongest among the Pandavas. That was Bhima. So, you know, Bhima came directly into his, you could say, envy meter. And Bhima was playful. Because he had a lot of strength, you know, he would like to exhibit his strength. He would do it without any malice. So, later on, in the forest, at one time, when they were fleeing, all the Pandavas got tired. So Bhima was just one among the Pandavas, but Bhima actually carried Kunti, Yudhishthir, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadeva on his body, and he ran. They were all tired, but he was tireless. Such was his strength. At one time, when in the forest, Pandu and Kunti had been sitting, and they had been chatting, and they're observing the sea. They're sitting on top of a cliff in the forest in the mountain. They'd be chatting and looking at the scenery, and Kunti had dozed off. At that time, suddenly in the distance, a tiger roared. And the tiger roared, Kunti had dozed off, got up. And she got up with a start, and Bhima was on her lap. And Bhima flew off her lap, and he fell down the cliff. Kunti screamed in horror. And in great alarm, Pandu rushed down the cliff as fast as he could. And by the time he reached down, he found that Bhima had fallen on a rock and the rock had broken apart. So, such was the strength of Bhima. So, when they would play in the water, Bhima would just playfully, he would just pick people and throw them away deeper into the water. So, when he did this, he did it with his brothers, they didn't mind, it was just playful. But when he did this with Duryodhana, it was unbearable for him. He says, I am the next king and you pick me up and throw me away. And in front of everyone, in front of all those who considered me to be the greatest, he just couldn't bear it. And he, at that time, made a plan. Just decided to kill Bhima. See, all of us can have negative emotions within us. Sometimes we feel angry. Sometimes we feel envious. Sometimes we feel lusty. Sometimes we feel greedy. Now, these negative emotions come within us. Now, how much we act on those negative emotions, that depends on our upbringing, on our association, and on our past life impressions. So, somebody may be greedy, and some child might be greedy, and the mother is told, take one cookie, A child goes at night and looks at the fridge and picks up a few more cookies and eats quietly. It's a small thing. Somebody else may be greedy and they may go to a shop and they may sneakily shoplift, steal something from there. Somebody else may be greedy and they may break into a house and steal from there. Somebody else may be so good, but these people, they just break into a house and nobody is there and they will steal from there. But they will not hurt anyone. But some thieves may be so greedy that they want to steal, and for stealing, if somebody comes in the way, they will even kill that person. So the greed is there in all of them. But the extent to which greed is expressed, whether it is simply taking something from one's house, we're not going to take, or whether it's to kill someone and steal, that variation in expression of the greed, that depends on one's past impressions and one's upbringing. And of course, Gonitai Bhagwan Ki Jai. Of course, it also depends on one's association. But here Duryodhana was just a small child, a teenager, not a small child, a teenager basically. And as a teenager, he came with a whole conspiracy to have Bhima poisoned. So that indicates that he not only had envy, but his envy was malicious. Malicious to the extent of being murderous. That's why you can say that all greed or all envy or all lust or all anger, they are not born equal. And the anger in person A and anger in person B are not the same. Because person A's character or conscience is different from person B's. And A will express that anger in a particular way. B may express it in an entirely different way or in a far greater degree. Now, for Duryodhana, he made the plan. He just acted very affectionate and he told the Pandavas and he called his brothers also. He said, let's go to the river and enjoy. We will have picnic over there and I will arrange for food for you. And we will have a feast. So they went and they played. And then when the food was being served, he pretended to be very affectionate to Bhima. I said, Bhima, I know you have a huge appetite. So I have prepared a special feast for you. And he said, I'll personally serve the feast to you. And acting very affectionate, he started serving the feast. Now the Pandavas had lived among the sages. And the sages had not been manipulative or deceptive. They were just simple sages who had renounced the world and had been focusing on transcendence. So Bhima was guileless and unsuspecting. And he just ate the food. Duryodhana kept serving him more. He kept eating. And then they all went to play. Bhima just fell asleep. The poison started having its effect. And he fell asleep. Then Duryodhana called some of his brothers, the eldest among them, and he had Bhima tied totally. And after he had his hands and legs tied, then he picked him up, and just as the way Bhima had playfully thrown him in the water, now he threw him into the water. But here, this was not playful, because Bhima was sleeping, was unconscious, the poison, and he was tied up. So the plan was that even if he somehow comes back to consciousness, still being tied, he will sink. So when Bhima hit the water, he started drowning. But as he went deeper and deeper into the water, there were some snakes over there. I thought, who is this sudden person, who is person intruded into our territory? So they started tuck, tuck, biting him. Now, whom Krishna protects, nobody can destroy. The Pandavas were virtuous and devoted. So Krishna, as the super soul, arranged for Duryodhana to choose a particular poison to put in the food. And that poison was such that when the snakes bit Bhima, the snake's poison acted as an antidote for the poison in the food. And in this way, Bhima, by being bit by the poison of the snakes, actually came back to consciousness. And when he came back to consciousness, he looked around and he said, where am I? And he saw these snakes biting him. He looked up, just picked up the snakes, huge snakes, and just started hurling them away, one by one by one. Snakes were shocked. No human being had survived their stings. What to speak of flinging them away like this? They just went swam and went to their king. And they told him this frightening human being has come into our territory. Now, their king, the god of the waters, Varuna was familiar with the hierarchy and the administration on the earth. So he recognized, oh, this must be Bhima. And when Bhishma had been in the heavens, they had been friends. And he said, this is the descendant of Bhishma. There are many connections she had. So, oh, this must be Bhima. He said to his messengers, please go and call him. And when Bhima came, they welcomed him and honored him. And after talking with him, Bhima said, we have got some special celestial nectar. If you drink it, those who drink it become extremely strong. So nowadays some people take some drinks, which they say, some energy drinks or something like that. You're tired, take some drink, and suddenly as if energy comes back to you. So this was not just an energy drink, it was like a bodybuilding drink. So the best of the most strongest of the warriors among those celestial beings, they could drink one pot. Bhima just took, he drank one full pot, and then he looked around, picked another pot. And as he was drinking the second pot, the mouths of all the residents of the court started falling apart. He took a third pot, he took a fourth pot, and just drank it, kept drinking it. Like that, he drank 10 pots. None of those Serpent Kingdom warriors had ever drunk more than one pot. And now, if you drink or eat a lot of food, what is the next thing we do? Yeah? Eat a lot?
I think then you get energy.
Yeah, but if you eat too much?
If you eat too much, you might get a bit tired.
Yes, we might get a bit tired and we go to sleep. Thank you. So, that's what happened. Then they saw that he was getting tired, they offered him a bed, and Bhima slept for one full week. And after he woke up, his body had become like thunderbolt. Like, each pot of celestial drink that he had taken, it had infused him with strength of hundreds of elephants. And when it was 10 pots, it was like hugely powerful he became. And in the meanwhile, Duryodhana was congratulating himself. Yes, operation successful. Bhima dead now. And of course, he was a politician. So externally, making a show, oh my dear friend Bhima, what happened to him? Where did he go? The whole palace was struck by grief, and he was also pretending as if he was also grieving. But internally he was joyous. Then after 1 week, suddenly Bhima just emerged out of the water and came running back to the palace. And he went straight to Yudhishthir and to his mother Kunti. Kunti, who had been besides herself with grief. She had been like, her husband had died, she was been like a single mother taking care of her sons, and she didn't know, one son, where had he gone? She came back, she hugged him, literally bathed him with her tears. And then she asked him, what happened? And she heard, because Bhima, he was also very shrewd. He understood what had happened. Varuna also told him that he had been poisoned and he had been saved. So when he told the whole story, Kunti was horrified. This is what her own nephew had done to her son. Yudhishthir became very grave. And Bhima was so furious. Bhima felt, right now I'll go and pummel this Duryodhana. How dare he try something like this? But Yudhishthir said, no. Right now, we've just come from the forest to here. We've been here for a short while and we don't know whose loyalties lie where. If we go against the Kauravas, even if your our accusation is true, an accusation will cause a big disruption in the family. And what will be the result of that, we can't know. So he said, this is a family matter, just keep it in the family, tolerate it. Just we will all be more cautious, but let's not bring it in the public. And he just made some story and it went on. Now when Duryodhana saw Bhima back, his worst nightmare had come true again. What happened? I thought I was successful and this person is back. And then as they went to Dronacharya's martial academy, and he saw that Bhima had become much stronger than earlier. This was even worse for him. Not only is my nemesis back, but my nemesis is stronger than before. So here his scheme completely backfired. Rather than destroying his opponent, the scheme ended up strengthening his opponent. And as he applied himself, he says, I'm going to become good. So his strength was mace fighting. And he developed immense skill in mace fighting. Bhima was also very good at mace fighting. Now Bhima was also very skillful. But in terms of skill, Duryodhana was better. But in terms of strength, Bhima was better. And both of them were excellent mace fighters overall. And often in the Gurukul also, they would repeatedly get into conflicts. And sometimes there are exhibition matches. But sometimes those exhibition matches would become earnest matches. So then others would intervene and stop them. But Duryodhana's anger and envy was going further and further within him and expressing itself without. So for us, all of us, as I said, we have certain negative emotions within us. And these are just inevitable in the course of life. Now we may sometimes feel envy, sometimes feel anger, sometimes these negative emotions just come because life brings up various kinds of stimuli before us and they trigger certain kind of responses within us. So when the responses that are triggered within us, they go beyond healthy limits, then we need to become strong and address them. If we don't address them, then they are going to get aggravated. The emotions within us are often like a snowball. A snowball at the top of a mountain is tiny. As it keeps moving downward, 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 it starts becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. And by the time the snowball has come to the bottom of the mountain, it can knock down a fully grown up person. That same person at the top of the mountain could have just with a flip of the toe cracked the snowball. But that person's body may be cracked by the snowball at the bottom. Similarly, when negative emotions start rising within us, if we can deal with them at the early stage, that's like breaking the snowball at the top. But once we let it come down, 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 then it becomes almost impossible to break it. Duryodhana, there was nobody whose counsel he could hear. As far as father was concerned, he felt that my father, no, he doesn't know anything. He says, I'm the real boss and I'll control my father. So, he never openly disrespected his father, but he manipulated his father. So, he was in no position to taking instruction from his father. This is the paradox that sometimes when our intention is to show our affection, but if there is only affection without discipline, then the result of it is that that the person grows up undisciplined and that person starts taking the affection for granted. So he couldn't hear from, he couldn't learn anything from Dhritarashtra. And then as far as other elders like Bhishma and Vidura and Drona were concerned, Duryodhana soon became convinced that all of them are partial to the Pandavas. Bhishma is, he is too affectionate to the Pandavas. Same with Drona. Drona loves Arjuna so much. That's why Arjuna is such a good archer and he's pleased him. So he's partial. And same with Vidura. Vidura, he was the strongest. So in this way, what happened is he cut himself off from anyone who could have stopped the snowball from moving down. So one is that when the negative emotions start coming within us, we stop it ourselves. The other is, if we can't stop it, we at least have well-wishers around us who tell us, oh, this is going too far, you have to check yourself. But if we start thinking that these well-wishers are not actually our well-wishers, we start thinking of them suspiciously and negatively, then we cut ourselves off from their advice. And most damagingly for Duryodhana, he opened himself to the malified advice from Shakuni. Shakuni had his own axe to grind. When Shakuni was the maternal uncle of Duryodhana. He was the brother of his mother Gandhari. Now when Bhishma himself was a celibate, but Bhishma, because he was a father figure, he took the responsibility of getting the marriages of Dhritarashtra and Pandu done. So he went to the kingdom of Gandhar and he said that, I would like to have the hand of your daughter in marriage for the Kuru prince. So Gandhar king said, I'm honored. And then when she came, along with that, Shakuni also came. And then, because Dhritarashtra was the elder son, elder among the two, so Bhishma had Gandhari married to Dhritarashtra. And then he had Kunti married to Pandu. Now Shakuni, he had expected that his sister would become the queen. And he felt that Bhishma had slighted their family and Gandhari by having her married to a blind man. And he felt that because Bhishma had done this, he became antagonistic to Bhishma. And he wanted to get back at Bhishma. So Gandhari accepted it. But Shakuni felt that she has been treated unfairly and I have to get back to her. And with this agenda in mind, he was looking around, how can I get back at Bhishma? And Duryodhana became a ready puppet in his hands. He saw that Duryodhana was already antagonistic to Bhishma, and if he could influence Duryodhana then he could get to hurt Bhishma terribly. And more than that, he also felt that if Duryodhana became the king, then at least Gandhari can become the queen mother. And of course, if Gandhari becomes the queen mother, then I'll become the brother of the queen mother. And I'll also get power. So he had his own axe to grind. And because of that, he started manipulating Duryodhana. And whereas Duryodhana earlier was doing some small conspiracies on his own, with Shakuni, he started making huge conspiracies. So, for us also, you know, we all have certain desires. As I said, certain weaknesses, certain negative desires and negative emotions come within us. And when they come within us, their coming to some extent is unavoidable. Because they're just natural reactions. We see somebody doing something and we feel angry. We see somebody achieving something, we feel envy. These emotions come up, but how we respond to them, that is our choice. If we fan them, if we contemplate them, oh, you know, this person, why should he be so praised? I am much better. Why is nobody recognizing me? Why is everybody praising that person? So that, if we keep contemplating it more and more, then that's like we are letting the snowball move down the mountain. Further, if somebody counsels us, you know, we all may have our own situations in our life where certain situations trigger negative emotions within us. Certain people trigger negative emotions within us. When that happens, we have to be intelligent enough to check those emotions. And we need some friends who will warn us, who will guide us. We need at least one friend in our life, you know, whose words we trust more than we trust the words of our mind. Normally, anybody speaks something to us. Sometimes somebody is very nice with us. We start thinking, you know, what does this person want from me? That's why there must be some agenda. That's why he's being so nice to me. Now, it could be that person has some agenda. It could be that the person is normally courteous. We don't know. But we look at people through the filter of our mind. And this way, whatever is our worldview, we project it on others. Now, if that means when I want something from someone, I am very nice to that person. Then this person is being nice to me. That means they must also be wanting something from me. It could be true. It may not be true. So normally we look at everyone from the filter of our mind. But if we have someone in our life whom we do not look through the filter of our mind, but rather we look at our mind and we look at them. And then we evaluate the mind through what that person is saying. Then at least we have some possibility of resisting the mind. But if such a person who tells us something which is different from what our mind is saying, and then we reject that person, you know, as envious, as foolish, as being from some other group, other party, I'm not concerned, then we make ourselves more and more vulnerable to being misled by the mind. And then worst of all, if we associate with someone who also has the same anartha that we have, the same malicious mentality that we have, if we associate with that person, then our negativity can become even worse. So it is like normally 1 plus 1 becomes 2. But in the case of anarthas, 1 and 1 can become 11. You know, it can just multiply enormously. So in that case, the negativity just multiplies and we may end up doing things which we would normally never have done. So in devotee association also, it's not that everyone is a serious devotee. We have to see what is the effect of that devotee association on me. Is that devotee association bringing out my higher side, or is it bringing out my lower side? So if it is bringing out my lower side, then I don't have to judge that devotee. The person is chanting, practicing bhakti, I respect them. But from a distance. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that if a devotee's behavior is not proper, keep a distance from them. Respect them from a distance. We have to associate with those devotees who will help us grow, who will help us improve our character. Now that devotee association is like a hospital. When we go to hospital, there is the cure available over there. But there are also many other patients who have many other diseases also. About 15 years, 13, 14 years ago when I was in Pune, I had got some very severe flu. So I was admitted to a public hospital over there. And when I was admitted in that hospital, that flu got cured in 3 days. But in the hospital, I got TB. And that TB lasted for 1 year. So, sometimes we may go to the hospital to get cured, but we may get infected in the hospital. So, similarly, in devotee association, we may come, but if we are not careful, we may have some small anartha which we are trying to overcome, but we associate indiscriminately with someone, and from them, you know, we may have some lust, we may have some greed, but somebody may have envy, somebody may have maliciousness, somebody may have power, hunger for power, whatever. Different devotees, they are all being treated by Krishna. But if we are not careful, we may get infected. So we have to be careful that our association, it nourishes our strengths, not our weaknesses. So for Duryodhana, he rejected the association that nourished his strengths and he embraced the association that fanned his lower side. And thus, he propelled himself down the path of not just immorality, but brutality. How that brutality manifested itself, we'll discuss in tomorrow's class. I'll summarize.